Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
As long as they keep showing up for us, we're going to try our best to keep making them. I wouldn't care if we get the fast 77 and we're in wheelchairs racing. We're going to do what we got to do to keep this thing rocking.
This is The Vault by Access Hollywood.
We're taking you on an epic journey into the heart of Hollywood with iconic interviews and fascinating conversations from the biggest stars in the business.
The Vault opens now.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Zuri Hall.
And I am Scott Evans.
And you are listening to The Vault by Access Hollywood. Today on the show, buckle up, baby. Pun intended. Mine kind of sounded like a trash vehicle reversing. I kind of wanted it to sound like a sexy Ferrari revving up. Yes, that part. That's where we're going with this.
Okay.
Because today, we are diving into some throwback clips centered around one of the biggest franchises of all time. 9 films and counting, y'all. Most franchises can't get off the ground after the second movie.
Right.
9 of these bad boys, and it ain't over yet. And it really was a star maker for the likes of Vin Diesel and Paul Walker. Mm-hmm. Today, we are talking about the Fast and Furious franchise. Do you remember how old you were, where you were, what you thought of the first one ever?
2001, the year. 8th grade.
Okay, okay. You started strong and then you almost lost me, but okay, 8th grade.
8th grade, Need for Speed on PlayStation made me believe that I was Paul Walker. Give me a NOS tank. In my Toyota Celica.
Yes.
Let's go. I'll never forget. I mean, you have to think about that time in a young boy's life where, I mean, in America, what you want is to be driving. What you want is a car. You want the freedom. You want the go. And so to see this movie blew you when they took the car up underneath the semi.
Yeah.
The little black Civic up underneath the semi. I was like, oh, I'm going to be a race car driver.
Right. So this is my calling. This is my destiny. Thank you, Fast and Furious.
Yep. How about you?
It all makes sense now. I just remember immediately on site falling completely in love with Paul Walker. So, duh.
Is anyone here, anyone here surprised? Anyone? Raise your hand if you're surprised that
Zuri
Hall fell madly in love.
Universally, like, people are just attracted. I can't help it. So you're going to say he wasn't an attractive young man at the time?
100%. I totally get it. I just am also not surprised. Like every girl.
I can't stand you. Like every girl. Yeah.
Every girl. Yeah. My mama loved Paul Walker.
She did. But even more than that, that was just a cherry on top. Michelle Rodriguez. Yes. I remember being like, oh my goodness, this is a badass woman in a really dope role. She's doing action herself. She's sweating. She's kicking. She's fighting. She's driving. It wasn't like the hot female sidekick who's around, you know,
right.
or there for someone else to bounce off comedy.
I love who's around.
Yeah. And it's like, no shade to people who played those characters. But what I loved about this film, because acting was one of my first loves, I was like, okay, these are the roles. This mm-hmm. is the kind of role that I want. Like, yeah. I want to be in the middle of the action. And so from a very early age, if you were in eighth grade, I was probably seventh. So we're talking like 12, maybe 13 years old.
Right.
And seeing that, that was a really cool example of what women could do on the big screen.
It just also was like, I remember being like, is Vin Diesel my daddy? Like, his voice.
Right.
Dom! Right. Yo! Like, I just remember being like, this is crazy. And he's literally driving these big ass muscle cars. Right. I loved it. I've been a longtime fan of the Fast and the Furious franchise and each and every spinoff. Like, I'm down. Let's go. Let's, yeah, why not have a submarine in Antarctica, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why let's not race on a polar ice cap? Why not beat a glacier with a helicopter? Why not?
As one does.
Let's drive a tow truck off a cliff in Hawaii. More, please. More.
Mm. Mm. Sign us up. Sign us up.
Yeah. It's so funny because you think about this franchise, of course, you immediately go to the big stunts, right? The fast cars. Remember, this was one of the first movies where you saw the light kits on mm-hmm. cars. And there was like, oh, I want a down light on my, nope, I'm not going to do
wait,
that to
what?
Myself.
Now you have to say
No.
You can't start and then not.
Okay, I'm going to just tell you, on my first car, my Ford Taurus SHO 5-speed had a Yamaha boat engine in it, okay? Ooh. I didn't have the LED little track lights for under the car.
Wait,
hold
on. I feel like I know where it's going and I don't know if I actually want to know.
I put tap lights. Remember the tap light?
Scott, my Wi-Fi connection is
cutting
out. I put
tap lights up under the car.
I'll see you next week.
And here's the thing. You think that tap light is going to, it ain't good. So I had a box of tap lights in the back. Just in case one fell off, I had to hit that double stick Velcro. Shoot, you couldn't tell me nothing.
You better DIY a Fast and
Do you hear me? OG.
You better arts and craft your way into a Vin Diesel situation.
Hey, might have got a ticket on the freeway for, hazardous materials. But listen.
Things.
I was fly when I pulled up to prom, I tell you that much.
That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. So, of course, we came to love this movie for the big stunts, the fast cars, and the action sequences, right? But you have to remember that in 2001, the franchise started as a small, should I say heist movie with like the double agent sent to infiltrate the ring, right? So the budget for the first one, I think, was $38 million.
Yep.
Compare that to where they are now with over $200 million, with most of that going into Vin Diesel's budget. Most of that into his bank account. You know what I'm saying? And I'm not even mad at it.
He earned it. He earned it, okay?
I'm not even mad at it.
He's
that and for
a
the
nine,
submarine.
Nine film franchise. Get your money. Get your money, King.
Get your chips. Get your chips. So in 2001, Access sat down with Paul Walker, who of course played Brian O'Connor in the franchise. And we asked him what it was like to be a part of this first film. Listen to what he had to say.
The way it came about was really kind of bizarre. Like I told you, they came to me and basically they just presented this idea. That's all it was at the time, was an idea. And they got it from a newspaper article. And they didn't even have a screenplay. They didn't have anything. They just had the premise. I mean, they knew what it was going to be about, but nothing more. And my representatives right off, I mean, they could tell that I was interested. And I was more than interested. I was really excited about the idea. And they said to me, they said, Paul, so are you considering doing this? And I could tell they're really leery, because that's a big no-no. You don't attach yourself to a project without reading the script first. But, my mind was telling me no, but my heart was saying, hell with it, just go for it. And so I did. They sent us off to driving school. This job really was, it was just a complete joke, because, I mean, I got paid to play. There were times where, it was trying and, it was challenging. There's a few scenes I had with Vin in the movie where, we really had to step it up. And, it was a good thing Rob was there at times, because we really weren't too sure where we were going with particular scenes. But, he gave us the guidance like a good director should, and, we made through it. But, when they came to me, we hadn't even started principal photography yet. And the studio came to me and they said, hey, look, we know that we haven't really started filming this movie yet, but if it wouldn't be too much to ask, we'd really like to send you off to driving school. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. so you guys are going to pay me to go to driving school right now. I'm like, yeah. So we went and we did that. We were only there for a couple of days. And, you know, I went there going into the school. I was pretty cocky, probably overly confident, you know. I felt like I knew how to drive. But after a few hours behind the wheel of one of these Indy cars they had there, I pretty much learned that I didn't know a single thing about driving. But Rob wanted to, you know, he wanted to capture stuff that had never before been captured. And the only way to do that was to actually put us behind the wheel. And that was great. I mean, there were times where I think under normal circumstances, it probably would have been a stuntman behind the wheel. But Rob knew that I was up for the challenge and that I wanted to do as much as possible. So, you know, I got in there. One sequence, for instance, in the climax of the film where the orange Supra is coming up alongside of the tractor trailer, the semi-truck, and the character Vince, played by Matt Schultz, is out there dangling. He's got a cable wrapped around his arm. And then proceed to, like, I asked Jordana Brewster's character, you know, yeah, get over here, take the wheel, get your foot on the gas. And I got out on the hood of the car, on the door of the car. They let me do all that. We were doing like 80, 90 miles an hour down the open highway. But, you know, that's the fun stuff, you know. And then Matt and I are out there dangling on the truck, doing the same speed. And, you know, the only other way to do that really is like green screen or blue screen. But who wants to do that? I mean, it's like, okay, you know, imagine, you know, they got the fans blowing in our face. And it's like, okay, imagine now you're zooming down the highway at 80 miles an hour. This is really intense. No, it was intense because we were really out there doing it at that speed. And that to me, that's just a kick. You don't find too often that you get to do that kind of stuff. You know, the studio is always concerned that, you know, they're going to break their head and we're not going to finish the movie. But, you know, they took all the precautionary steps and, you know, they knew we were capable, so they said, heck with it, we'll let the actors do it.
That's another thing. Early on in the franchise, the practical effects were so over the top.
Yeah.
You were like, that's really Paul hanging off the side of the street.
Right.
Yeah, like hanging off the side of the street. That's really them drifting down against traffic. You know what I mean? Like it was, you never had seen things like that in a movie before.
Right. Which is a testament to the fandom. When you're seeing something for the first time, you're like, oh, wait, what? We're doing this in movies now?
Yeah.
It's easy to understand why fans have remained so loyal over the course of 9 films. I mean, you know, we're talking about the first film we saw, 7th and 8th grade. We are grown humans with jobs and bills and mortgages now. Still talking about new movies coming out. But they were certainly the first to present the iconic or quintessential car chase in that way, in that big of a fashion.
Yeah.
You're right about that. And that's been really cool. In every single film, they find a way to up the ante. And obviously now we get all the awesome CGI stuff too. And it's just like this perfect combination of special effect and actual true and real action, which is rare, but clearly a reason for their success.
You know, one of the things that's cool, if you go back to watch the first one, now I'm gonna be real with you.
Okay.
The first one is like a time capsule. I'm talking about the music that they use. They've had to since change, right? Like if you watch the streaming version of the movie, the music is a little different than if you had the VHS tape, right?
Wait, why? Because they don't have the rights to play the music anymore?
Because licensing things have changed because it didn't turn out so hot. Like it's just, so it's kind of wild, right? So it's this time capsule. The fashion.
Oh, long live the fashion. Come on.
I mean, low rise jeans. I'm talking, they might as well. I mean,
a little bit of crack jeans.
a lot of crack. A lot of bit of crack jeans.
It's
so funny. But think about the fact that before that, Vin Diesel and Paul Walker were relatively, I mean, Vin had definitely done some other movies, wasn't a mega, mega star yet, but they were relatively unknowns.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to be like shade them or anything like that, but after this movie, they went pick and choose their projects.
Because this is a level of stardom that very few people ever reach, right?
Right.
So like, it's not to say you weren't a working actor before or that you weren't consistently getting paid, but this is just some rare sacred ground to touch as an actor. And so for them, this franchise certainly was the thing that kind of put them into the next tier, that top tier of mega movie star, blockbuster star. And what I think is really cool is the fact that they all truly became family. Like over the years, you saw them stay in touch and be there for each other's most important family moments. You know, he mentioned Jordana Brewster, Michelle Rodriguez, Vin, like they all seem to really like each other, even when the cameras weren't rolling. And I think as the films progress, that chemistry definitely comes through.
Yeah, 100%. Matter of fact, Hunter, I want to watch one of these clips. Well, let's take a break. I'm gonna take a break. Quick, I want to watch one of the clips.
How'd you like the clip? It's a good one.
I mean, I accidentally watched the is Ludacris at the front of the race talking about, are you ready? It's just, I mean, if you got to touch one of these movies, you were like, no. How can I stay in this whole situation?
Yeah. No, it's so true. The franchise has delivered consistently for quite a while now. I mean, over the past 20 years, it's just gotten bigger and bigger, faster, more furious. Sorry, I had to, guys.
You little shaky voice, little shaky man.
And it's not just been the spectacle. What's been cool is to see the cast evolve and grow and expand too, right? Originally, we saw Vin Diesel, Paul, Michelle, Jordana in that first installment. But then over the years, a bunch of other actors joined the series. Tyrese Gibson, who honestly was one of my favorites in it, because he's just so funny in the most, like,
he's saying what you're thinking.
Have me doing type energy. So I was here for Tyrese. Chris, obviously, Ludacris, Bridges, Soon Kang.
That was after, I believe, the Tokyo Drift. He was brought in after that franchise. And a lot of people are upset about the Tokyo Drift situation. They think that it should not be associated, should not be an actual part of the franchise. But I disagree, because we got some motorcycle situations out of that one. You know what I mean?
Fast and Furious, it qualifies, y'all. Back off, okay?
Back off.
But also, like, don't come for me on Twitter, because I really don't have the energy. If you're a part of the most loyal of fandom, please just don't at me. Gal Gadot, Dwayne Johnson, The Rock showed up. I was like, okay, really taking this to the next level. See it. Jason Statham, Charlize Theron, John Cena, so many more. When they were doing press for Fast and Furious 6, five movies after that first one. This was 2013, and Access actually sat down with Michelle Rodriguez to ask her about what it felt like to be part of such a diverse cast, which is really one of the standouts for me, is that representation on screen. And this, we're talking about a decade before that call to action was as vocal and as prevalent as it is now. So she sat down and talked with us about that. So here's what she had to say.
Isn't it amazing? It's almost like TV coming to the big screen, but not in a corny, cheesy way, in any way, shape or form. But it's where do you see a saga with such a multicultural cast, with such a big cast, survive that many movies?
Exactly.
And that's what I felt in those seconds of, like, the last 13 years of the franchise. It was like,
but also so cool. That multicultural aspect has not only helped the series evolve for the better, but also appeal to so many demos across the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that's huge.
It is really, really huge. And I travel a lot. That's all I do. And I gotta say, you know, amongst all the movies that I've done, you know, I only get three movies over and over and over and over again. Fast and Furious, I get, you know, the girl fight of it all, and the Avatar of it all. And I'm just so proud to be a part of this franchise, just because it's like, it's very rare that you get people who walk the other side of the tracks and they're not selling drugs. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
multicultural cast, because, you know, minorities have it hard in Hollywood as far as representation and getting any respect. There's so many millionaires from many different walks of life, Russian, you know, African-American, you know, Spanish. And it's like whenever they're seen depicted in movies, they're either drug dealers or pimps or, like, bad terrorists. So it's really great. This franchise really does justice for many.
Said it there.
She's so right,
she said
about it.
Yeah.
That part.
And it was cool because everybody in it was badass, right? Mm-hmm. Bow Wow. I just want to mention Bow Wow was in Tokyo Drift. The second. Yeah.
Well, I forgot about that.
Like, it is the gift that keeps on. You want a good Saturday? Mm-hmm. Pull out your Fast and Furious DVDs, your special edition collector set.
Can we just stream it, Scott, in 2021? Or you
I want you to pull out the DVD player, find where it is. If you got it on VHS, you might have it on VHS. You might. Let's just be
now
real.
Now you
got
to find a VHS player, and that's a lot to ask.
Now, and worse than the player itself, the cord, the hookup to the TV, because you know you don't know where that is.
It's in a box somewhere. You know you brought it to the new house, but
where did I put it? Did I throw it away?
Oh, man. But no, I love that clip from Michelle. She's so right about that. And the fact that you're seeing minorities not in these token roles, mm-hmm. but in these additive roles where their characters are moving the needle and very significant and vital to the plot. Vin Diesel, actually, when he was doing press for the next movie, for Furious 7, said that it doesn't matter what nationality you are, as a member of the audience, you realize you can be a member of that quote-unquote family. And I think that's so true. And it gives really good insight into the longevity of the franchise, because people feel seen and represented, and they've been feeling seen and represented since the beginning, mm-hmm. where they may not have necessarily felt that in other spaces and on other films and or shows. So,
and certainly not with such box office success,
right?
Globally.
Right, at that level, exactly.
Yeah, like proven that it's not all about an all-white cast being success, right? That the tokenism isn't the success. Right. It's so funny you talk about family, because you can't talk about the Fast franchise without talking about the seventh installment, right? As we all know, the seventh movie was the final appearance of Paul Walker's character, who tragically died in 2013. Furious 7 was dedicated to Paul, and the film went on to become the highest grossing film of the franchise after just 12 days, the third highest grossing of 2015, and the fourth highest grossing of all time at the time of its release. So this was the part that, like, when you talk about in the movie theater, you could hear people crying, you could actually hear tears, because in the scenes that Paul was meant to appear in but hadn't yet filmed before his death, his brothers actually stepped in to film for him. And in the songs, I believe Charlie Puth even wrote, and it was Grammy nominated. I mean, it was like we all were mourning the loss of him. So in 2015, while doing press for the movie, Vin Diesel took some time to share just a couple of his thoughts of his late friend and co-star with Access. Listen to what Vin had to say.
I met Paul. We did this kind of disastrous read-through at Universal. And we were on one of the stages. There was about 50 people there, writers, producers, executives. And we were just beating up the script. I felt bad for the writer. I felt bad for the director. We were just questioning everything. Yeah. And I remember Paul, after every other line that he was concerned about, he'd look across the room and go, "What do you think, Vin?" And the director and the writers were looking at him like, "Why are you asking Vin?"
So he kind of knew that you were like the big brother in that sense.
He knew I was the big brother.
Immediately.
It's how that relationship started. He knew that I was going to fight for him for the rest of my life.
And you knew it right then?
I did know it. There was something. We're from two different places. I'm from the East Coast. He's from California. We couldn't be further, you know, apart mm-hmm. in some ways. And yet, we were so much alike.
Yeah.
I have a twin brother with blonde hair and blue eyes named Paul. So, if you were to ask my mother, she would say that my relationship with Paul Walker, for me and for my own spiritual growth, was a representation of this person that is my twin brother.
Aww. Now, if your little Vincent asks you about Paul in a few years, what will you tell him? What will you tell him about your friend Paul?
I will tell him there's only one Paul Walker in the universe. I will tell him that I'm I'm lucky, and those 15 years of that unique kind of bond, I'll cherish forever. I'll tell him that it was Paul Walker that made me get up to the hospital in time to receive him.
Really?
So we were filming a scene in Puerto Rico, on the bridge in Puerto Rico, the ending scene of Fast Five, and because it was raining so much, we kept on having to wait for the rain and the clouds to go by. And so I had a plane on the tarmac. The water had broken up in New York.
Wow.
I had to get up to New York. And I remember telling him, you know, the water just broke. And he said, what? You got to get out of here. You got to get out of here. It's not even a deal.
Aww.
You got to get out of here. It's a closed. We can film this later. And he basically pushed me off the set and got me up to New York just in time for my son.
It's important stuff like that, and I keep hearing that about Paul, that he knew what was important in life.
Sure did.
And, you know, there's the final scene where it's sort of, Tyrese pointed out that it's a double entendre. It could be you saying it as your characters, or you really saying those words for Paul. Did you feel that when you were having to read that part of the script?
Some of that was off script.
Really?
As you can imagine. And it was so powerful. That when I was done saying it, and James Wan just kept the camera rolling, and when I was done saying it, I looked around the studio and everyone was crying. You didn't know where fiction began and reality ended in a way. It was
some of the moments, especially with Paul and his wife on screen, they seem so poignant because they could almost be true. The last phone call was really hard. Did you guys feel that as well?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. One of the things that has made this franchise so successful is how this mythology bleeds into reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have a lot of friends and I have a lot of family, but, you know, my most prized relationship in some ways was always Paul, because mm-hmm. we started as unknowns and we became iconic together over mm-hmm. 15 years and dealt with the pressure of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were free people
yeah.
Back in 2000, and then as the fame came, we both became more and more recluse,
yeah.
and more of a recluse, and we always charted the fact that in the midst of all that, we still have,
mm-hmm.
I could still look at you and I could still remember Paul and I, that time when we did have our anonymity.
Yeah.
And so there was always that bonding thing.
Wow. I mean, the emotion behind his voice, you hear him getting choked up at certain points. We've talked about how close the cast seems to be and how connected they are. But I mean, if that 5 minutes doesn't show just how deeply bonded those two were, I mean, it's so bittersweet to hear, but how beautiful of him to share the way they really came from nothing to everything together. And that sort of bond is something sacred and rare, and so few people could experience or understand it. So for Vin to open up like that was really special.
And he doesn't, I mean, he's a cool dude. He is a no rules interview. He's one of those who's ready to and prepared to sit down.
Right.
And really, he's also one of those people that you don't sit down and ask no crazy stuff.
Crazy now, because we saw the movies.
You know what I'm saying? You seen Pitch Black. Hit you with an elbow and don't even move from the chair. You know what I'm saying? But one of the, I think his last line in the movie is, "You'll always be with me and you'll always be my brother." And when I tell you, it was like, I have a friend, Margie Griffin. She's a twin and they are some of my oldest friends from Indianapolis. And I remember sitting in the movie theater with her and she was sobbing.
Mm-hmm.
because it just felt like, one, rarely does a movie do a really good job of sending off its like icon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, they've certainly handled the franchise with grace and thought, and clearly there's no stopping it anytime soon. As long as everybody keeps coming back, I think we're getting another Fast and Furious because people love the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
The 9th movie is in theaters this week, actually, and the 10th and 11th installments are in development along with a number of other spinoffs. So really, this series is just like the gift that keeps on giving.
Yes.
We've gotten so many new characters and movies because of the franchise.
Do you know that I'm auditioning?
I love that. Are you? Are you lying?
No.
For what role?
Any role.
Oh, good night.
Stand in. I'll put gas in the car. I'll
the oil changes.
Yeah. Whatever, you know, what okay, I'll be submarine pilot. Is there a pilot of a submarine? I'll figure it out.
I feel like pilots fly, but
that's what, until it's in until water. It's in Fast and the Furious, oh, you see right, a flying right, submarine.
Right. You know what? You could be the first, Scott. You could be the first. I'm just trying to be Michelle Rodriguez's homegirl who's like
Tasha. I mean,
she's afraid of bugs and she doesn't really whatever, but she can help out. And at first I'm like, y'all, I'm afraid of bugs and I don't even really know how to drive. And then by the end, I'm just popping
whipping,
wheelies and
whipping. Popping
whipping.
Wheelies in a car.
I was going to say it. And then I was like, wait, I don't think you pop wheelies in a car.
Yeah.
It shows you where my head is.
But right you're going to do it. See, because I'm going to be a pilot of a submarine. We talking about firsts.
Listen, bro. Yo, put us in the film.
Whoever's
listening.
Put us in, son.
You feel it? 2022. We're going to be doing our own episode of The Vault. They're going to be playing our
clips.
Went off the deep end and thought they were going to be in the franchise.
Well, right. Got locked up trying to break onto the set.
Oh, my God. Prison. All right. Well, in the meantime, while we are still not incarcerated, employed. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of The Vault, y'all. The Fast franchise is clearly still on the climb, so we can't wait to see what's coming next for them. In the meantime, make sure y'all are subscribed.
The Vault by Access Hollywood is hosted by Scott Evans and Zuri Hall, produced by Access Hollywood Digital's Jenny Depper and Rebecca Zamer, and Digital Media Management's Grant Rutter, Audrey Povar, and Ryan Middledorf, and Trey Boudet. Join us next week when we open up that vault again for more iconic celebrity interviews and all things entertainment. Rate, subscribe, and share.